1. We are awaiting a refill for Rick's position. We're looking to base the new hire in or around Haven in recognition of the current location and duty stations of the other 3 rehabilitation teachers who continue to serve clients. We have also very recently, just at the very beginning of August, hired a 3rd orientation and mobility instructor, Glenn Javlon, who has fairly long service in this arena, and joins us. He moved out from Peoria, Illinois, and he is settling into Connecticut very well. He is primarily covering the district that the service territory that Heidi Ross once covered, starting around East Hartford and heading eastward toward the Rhode Island border and in the north along the Massachusetts border. And so we do at present overall have, with the 5 social work staff, the 3 mobility instructors, the 3 rehab teachers, as I said, we're awaiting the hiring of Rick's replacement, which would give us our customary operating level of 4 rehabilitation teachers. We also converted a position that had been slated to be filled by a 4th mobility instructor, and we successfully requested and received permission from the commissioner and to convert that 4th mobility position into a rehabilitation technologist. So that would be a 5th, in effect, a 5th rehab teacher whose responsibility it would be to cover the technology needs statewide of all BSB adult services clients. This is something that the staff is very enthusiastic about. It would mark the first time that the adult services program has had a dedicated staff person focusing on technology. And so I want to hearken back to Steve's opening comment, asking about the future of technology instruction, to say we have taken the plunge. We're very anxious for this position to be posted. We're hoping that the Department of Administrative Services moves quickly to post that position. So that is the as regards services and staffing levels, an update from Adult Services. Just to reply to one other of Steve's questions, we have received a draft of the 2022 large print calendar. We have been exchanging edits with our graphic designer at the Department of Administrative Services, Nina Ritson, who's been our long-term partner in designing and laying out the large print calendar. We are very hopeful of having that printed certainly by the end of this month and having it sent out. Of course, as you know, we now approach October, we are starting to get questions, not just from Steve, but from many clients about whether this will continue, and we're happy to say that we will be sending out, well over 1,000 large print calendars to our many clients who rely on them. I would say that pretty much covers, an overview of the adult services program and where we stand right now. And I don't know if anyone on the board or otherwise listening in has any questions for me.
I just want to comment. I'll take the chair's privilege. Sounds like some really good news, and that's terrific. My concern. So then, going forward, it is the expectation that BSB will continue with only 3 O&M instructors. Is that correct?
Yes, at present. We had interviewed with the anticipation of hiring 2 mobility instructors. Those interviews took place, I believe, in March. We were very enthusiastic about some of the candidates, and we ended up hiring one, that's Glenn, who, you know, it took until August for him to arrive. However, the staff felt very comfortable, the mobility staff, going forward with just, you know, given adequate support, which they expressed they were receiving in terms of, you know, the provision of canes and the, you know, we've worked out a very successful inventory control system where the staff from the procurement division have been working in the stock room and making canes and other mobility aids available on a very timely and routine basis. So they said they were comfortable with just the 3, and that caused us to very enthusiastically adopt, request a technology position. Yeah. So we were not, we considered this at some length, and the staff felt that they could handle the workload with just 3 mobility instructors.
All right. The other issue that I'm going to speak kind of for Steve because he might be having difficulties unmuting. He asked about emotional challenges because of the pandemic. Has that been an issue at all?
I'd say that we have noticed the field staff they've been serving clients throughout the pandemic. There have been occasional initiatives where we had clients reaching out to us and offering that if we encountered other new clients who we had identified as wanting, a partner, someone to talk to about blindness adjustment, and we took advantage of some of these offerings by some of our clients to work and support other clients during their rehabilitation. So where both parties were in favor, we did make some peer-to-peer matches. And as I say, we obviously very carefully followed confidentiality protocol, but when we had 2 clients who both were interested in, in talking about their ongoing blindness adjustment, we make those matches. And some of the staff have also assisted clients, pointing out that, you know, they should, if they felt they needed assistance, go through, you know, their primary care provider and seek, support in a professional capacity. We did, I would say that we probably had understandably something of an increase in interest at this period, but we did not really encounter any clients who were, who expressed a critical need, and if we had, we would have advised them to go to their medical provider. But there was something of an increase of, peer-to-peer matches, I would say.
Thank you. All right.
I just wanted to say one other thing, Eileen.
Sure.
Benefited with the rather obviously untimely death of one of our colleagues, Julie McLean, who upon her death left a very considerable sum to assist adult services clients in particular. I don't know if this is generally, much known. Julie left a sum of just about $200,000 to support the ongoing needs of adult services. quite honestly, I believe in recognition of the fact that that, you know, we sometimes have experienced, you know, budgetary cutbacks, and our level of funding to provide client services and devices is not what the other programs enjoy. And so we were very, very fortunate. It was quite a surprise. But that money will be available to assist clients with technology and other needs going forward.
Oh, that's extraordinary. And I would hope that the minutes would reflect the board's gratitude and appreciation for Julie and her extraordinary work with the community. She was a very dedicated member of the Besby staff, and how she helped so many people, and this donation is just incredible, and just reflects, I think, the kind of person Julie was. Thank you for calling that to our attention.
It's Mary Silverberg. I have a question. How was that contribution acknowledged to the family?
Ryan, the family got a letter of appreciation from me, and additionally, I was one of the folks that attended a memorial service. Many of the staff, the Bureau, attended the memorial services as well, but they did get an acknowledgement from me.
Okay. And your physical presence are
right.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you, Brian.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
Other questions for Chris, please, at this time? All right. Then we'll move on to Children's Services. Catherine, please.
One second. I believe Laurie St. Amon is on and was perhaps prepared to talk a little bit about volunteer services.
Oh, I didn't see that on the agenda.
Well, she's part of Adult Services, so.
Oh, okay.
That's all right. Yes, Laurie appears to be. Go ahead, Laurie. Laurie, can you turn up your volume, please?
Okay, is this a little better?
Yes.
A little better.
A little better.
Want to turn it up more?
You know, I can't tell which volume is not high enough, if it's my computer or if it's my Zoom.
But it's still good.
Now you're good. You're good.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm talking a little more loudly. So I just wanted to say, in regards to the question about support that Steve had asked, that we did switch our support group to an telephone format, which was very effective for a number of our consumers. And so Chris didn't get a chance to mention that, but I did want to bring that up. And those support group meetings are going to continue starting after the summer break. We're going to commence again in October, and people should be free to join that support group if they have an interest. And then the other thing is that in my travels with consumers, have absolutely found a need for additional support. And so, as Chris had mentioned, referring them, if they have an absolute clinical need, immediately to either, you know, calling 911 if that's how they are feeling, or to encourage them to use the telehealth supports that are located on the back of their insurance cards. And then the other thing also is to steer focus towards 211, which has available services for, you know, at the clearinghouse for anybody, regardless of where they are in the state, and regardless of, you know, whether or not they have a private insurance that would take that call for them. So I think that we have done a really great job of addressing the concerns that have been brought to us, and hope that people have taken advantage of the resources that we've offered, both through 211 and through the support group. So I just wanted to add that piece in. But as for the Besby Volunteer Program, you know, our volunteer always, of course, in accordance with the COVID-19 sector guidelines. And while some folks may have thought we were closed, we absolutely were not closed. So, you know, I've said throughout this whole thing, volunteers have been leading from the sidelines, making sure that people have access to all the fresh food that they need and other support services. So, circle back to 2021. So far, as of yesterday, the volunteers have provided 228 ongoing direct service matches, and each consumer usually requests all five services: shopping, driving, reading, sorting the mail, and friendly visiting. So I think that's, again, a fine representation of the good that's in the world that we need to embrace. So in addition to those 228 direct services, there has also been 72 support services that were matched, and those represent the folks who participate in providing children's leisure reading materials to our Braille program. It includes a volunteer who comes here into the office and gives me some assistance, and another volunteer who helps me out on a remote basis as well. So things have definitely been moving along and continue to do so. So I'm really happy at that. And then I did have the opportunity in August to re-engage with a Bessie consumer who has since moved out of state, and he now lives in North Carolina. And throughout the time he was here in Connecticut, he engaged very heavily, not only with the volunteer program, but with adult services in general, and specifically had some of his more unique concerns addressed through Brian. And he remembers so very fondly all his now, as part of the Raleigh, North Carolina advisory group to citizens who are blind, and I think I didn't say that right, the North Carolina Council for the Blind, they have a nonprofit down there, and they are interested in starting a volunteer program of their own. So they did ask me to participate in their meeting and give them some insight as to how our program operates, and they were really very appreciative of that. And so I think it's a our program works, that works really well, and that also Brian is going to be met, not just here in Connecticut, but in other states as well. So that concludes my report, and I want to thank you.
You're kind of cutting in and out just a little bit, but my question to you is, with more people being vaccinated and so on, do you find that some of the volunteers who and clients who were hesitant to engage in direct services, that there's been more re-engagement of those kinds of that kind of activity?
Yes, I think there has been some re-engagement. A lot of our volunteers and consumers had switched to meeting outside and redevelop that comfort level that they had for being with one another. I think the area where we're really still seeing a lot of slow going are the facilities and senior housing complexes, where the rules perhaps are more strict. So, for example, I heard from a consumer earlier in the week that his volunteer is only allowed 30 minutes in the building. So, you know, other than, you know, bringing a cup of coffee and sharing some anecdotes, there's not a whole lot of activity that could be accomplished in 30 minutes, but I think it's still that one-on-one, getting to see a new face, getting to hear a new perspective, engaging with someone other than a care team has tremendous value. And so I'm glad to see that even some of those facilities are starting to be more open.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions from other people, other participants? All right, then, if there are no questions, now we will move on to children's services, I think. Catherine, please.
Okay, hi, good morning, everyone. And I'm here to give you an update on the children's services program. And I'm so happy to report that we have been able to resume primarily in-person services for our children and students this year. The staff are really excited about that, to finally see the students in person. we do continue to provide some remote services for children who are medically fragile, or for babies and preschool-age children whose parents have elected to continue with remote services until a vaccine becomes available for them. We currently have 912 active children in children's services, and out of that number, the education consultants are providing services to 685 of those children. So I also wanted to give you an update on our staffing. I'm so happy to report that Lauren Royce was hired as a BSBE education consultant at the end of August, and she was formerly a BSBE special assistant, in case her name sounds familiar to all of you. So we're excited to have Lauren on board, and she's just an excellent addition to the children's services team. We did have a couple retirements this summer. Lisa Pruner and Yvonne Locke, two longtime BSBE education consultants, did retire. The good news is we are in the process of recruiting to replace them. The positions for their vacancies were posted earlier this week, and the positions close on October 5th, so I hope that we will have applicants to choose from, and I'll keep you posted on that. And we continue to have a vacancy, actually two vacancies in O&M, but we have really tried to recruit heavily for an O&M instructor, and we have hit the pause button on that for the moment, but we're going to see if there is potential to recruit for that position, perhaps in the early winter. So that's the update on our program staff. And since we met last, in addition to providing services first remotely in educational settings and now primarily in person, we have really done our best to continue with our expanded core curriculum activities. So they have been provided primarily in a virtual format, again, due to COVID. So just to summarize the programs for you, for example, we had a series called Creative Chefs. Not yet four times since we last met. So on March 22nd, April 27th, and May 25th, and June 9th. And this was a group of eight students who met virtually. The majority of them had met in person prior to the pandemic. There were five education consultants involved in the planning and execution of these online cooking and socialization activities. And there was also adult support for in-home safety. So that was really fantastic. And then we had an online origami program. This ran for three consecutive months, once a month. And we had an origami artist by the name of Ben Parker, who led these classes and social events. Again, very well received. We had eight students participate in grades 5 through 7. We also had our annual parent education program. We did that this past March, March 25th. For the first time ever, it was virtual. We had quite a turnout, I have to say, and a lot of fantastic feedback from the presenters as well as the parent and guardian participants. So we had 17 organizations related to visual impairment from throughout the United States participate. They did short breakout room presentations. Participants could freely move from one virtual room to another to ask questions about the programs that these other organizations had to offer. And there was a BSBE staff person stationed to each room so they could also answer questions related to our services. So we had 28 families participate. We had 23 BSBE staff representatives also participate, and 26 members from the 17 organizations participate. And the states that were represented were Connecticut, Texas, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, New York, Kentucky, Oregon, and Utah. If we did this in person, there's no way we could have brought these groups to us, so this was a real positive. And then we've also had a virtual music group meet, and that's going to continue now starting this fall. So this is for our youngest students, babies, infants, toddlers, even some kindergartners. So
merge music groups.
Sorry?
Sorry. Go ahead.
virtual music groups met and were led by Emily Villavacqua from the Connecticut Music Therapy. And they were 45-minute sessions that were focused on body parts and developmental concepts through finger play, movement, and music. So the families loved them, and this series was led by Lisa Pruner, who retired, but Jessica Gibson, who's one of our newer education consultants, has picked it up and is going to carry on. We also had one more Leap into Life mentor event in the series we had last year. This took place on May 18th, and we had a college sophomore and former children's services client by the name of Lizzie Capelli share experiences and tips on making the most of college. So the event took place over Teams. And then moving on to summer, we typically do an in-person Skills for Life session, but in the summer of 2020, due to the pandemic, and now again because of the pandemic, we continued in a virtual format, but still really well received. This took place in July of July 13th and 14th, and then July 20th and 21st. This was led by our O&M instructors, our rehab teacher, and a couple of our education consultants. So while the mobility was a little limited because everything was done online, there were skills students could work on in between the sessions, and as a group, they worked on expanded core curriculum-related activities, such as cooking, book discussions, and just general socialization. So that was so well received that students have requested continuing throughout the fall. And I know at some point the children's services staff, once they've settled in with their new caseloads, are going to pick that up again. So we in children's services were a little nervous about continuing with these virtual programs. We thought, oh, everyone has Teams fatigue and Zoom fatigue. But no, the students and the families still want to continue, so we're happy about that. And of course, we look forward to the day when we can really resume these in-person ECC activities. So we did actually have one in-person event occur. We were able to sponsor children to attend Camp Independence at Channel 3 Kids Camp in Andover this summer. We weren't able to do it at all last year. The camp was closed. We were hesitant. We weren't sure if we would be able to do it this year because of, the ongoing pandemic, but we decided to do it, and we had 12 students attend, and I have to tell you, these students and their parents were so passionate about this camp. They wanted to make sure it was going to happen, and I'm so glad it did. I had the opportunity to visit the camp one day, and the children were so excited. They were so relaxed, and it was really refreshing to see children engaging in person in social activities again. And of course, they had all of the COVID safety protocols in place, but they truly were in this wilderness bubble that was so lovely. I know I wanted to stay, so I look forward to carrying on this camp tradition next year. And our BESBE Buzz, the BESBE Children's Services newsletter. We published a spring edition, and we are in the works with our fall edition. We have two new editors, Jesse Mabry and Jessica Gibson. So they're hard at work already, learning the ropes of putting a newsletter together and then recruiting articles from their colleagues. So that are the program highlights. We had a busy spring, busy summer. We have a busy fall ahead of us. And we are continuing, I'm going to add too, with our fall in service series for the second year again because of COVID. They're virtual, but we have that template. A lot of work last year, but we have 6 virtual fall in services for paraprofessionals, preschool teachers and support staff, teachers and other education team members working with children who are braille readers, teachers working with children who are large print learners, teachers and other education team members working with children who have multiple impairments, and an in-service devoted to cortical visual impairment. So we have a lot going on. We also have an online training program that is devoted to education team members working with children who have cortical visual impairment. So this is separate from the one-day virtual fall-in service. This is an ongoing program. We anticipate participants, you can stay in forever if they want to, if they remain with a student, or they may want to stay for 1 to 2 years. It's rather self-paced, but there are discussion groups, there are modules, rail class for paraprofessionals. We've had for over 20 years. So that's a new addition to some of the services that we have to offer. Does anyone have any questions?
Well, I'm going to start. Again, taking the chair's privilege. Catherine, what is the average size of caseload for the BESBE ed consultants?
Robust, I'm going to say that. You know, the caseloads are based on recommended service delivery hours. So I want to say that the caseloads do vary in size, but I want to say the average size this year is probably 25 to 29. We do have some staff who have 40-hour work weeks. The majority have 35-hour work weeks, so those hours are taken into consideration. But they are high. I'm not going to lie about that. I am working very hard to recruit for these vacant positions. Eileen, I also want you to know that I have had discussions with the Bureau of Special Education regarding DSAP certification consideration. I know that that is very prevalent throughout Connecticut this year. We're short with two teachers. I'm going to tell you, and you probably know already, school districts are really, really struggling. They've had to get creative. So through my involvement with the State Advisory Council for Special Education, I have learned that the majority, if not all, districts are utilizing the DSAP certification for teachers who are still primarily in teacher training programs to get them on board. If we have to go that route, I'd like to know that we have that possibility, again, provided that's only if we don't have qualified, certified candidates who apply, and we would have to then consider individuals who apply who may possess the qualifications but not necessarily the certification yet. So I'm working really hard at it.
Wow. Another question, have there been any informal poll taken, for lack of a better word, among the teachers about how many students might be involved? And this, again, without confident, going into confidence, just numbers, where students just individually might be involved with chatting with other students who are blind or visually impaired. Because to me, from my long-ago experience, the peer interaction and the peer advice, and peers can say things to each other that need to be said, but that I as a teacher could never say, but they listen to each other far, in some instances, far more than they listen to me. So I'm just wondering, have teachers ever looked into how many kids, just on their own initiative, are chatting together or anything like that?
I can certainly poll the staff, and I do have a staff meeting coming up in a couple of weeks, and I will bring it up with them. I think one of the reasons why we're trying to continue with our ECC activities, even if they are virtual, is we think it is so important for our students to have an opportunity to get together and talk with one another. I don't know how much chatter and socialization takes place outside of these organized groups. I think with the older students, it may happen more often than with the younger technology. I also want to add, Eileen, that Through the State Advisory Council for Special Education, we do have a student representative. I'm also the chair of the membership committee in that organization. So I push my staff hard when it comes to recruiting student members. And for a long time last year, we didn't have a student voice, which is so critical. And lo and behold, the student who has been recruited and has been representing students in the state of Connecticut this year so far since she joined in February is a BSBE student. So I want you to know she's doing a really fine job of representing not just children who are blind and visually impaired, but all children in the state of Connecticut who have disabilities.
Wow. Thank you. I'm going to ask, as the parent kind of representative, Catherine Guzman, do you have any questions that you would like to ask?
Not right at this moment. I'm sort of taking it all in. It all sounds wonderful. We are, my family is currently homeschooling both of our children, and so we are one of the few that is still doing over phone services versus in person. Due to my youngest son's medical condition. So I know exactly how it feels to those who are looking forward to the vaccine and looking forward to having people back in school, and all of those interactions are very important, and we are missing them. So I can say I understand where everyone's coming from on that, and we look forward to moving forward with all of this. Thank you very much, Catherine, for filling us all in.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad it sounds like everything is wonderful, but as I said too, I used the word recalibration with one of my staff members the other day, and he said, that sums it up. I think we're recalibrating. We're excited that we have the ability to meet in person, but Catherine, you know, you just described your own personal situation, and so we're not totally back to normal yet. So we're still on this journey of how do we best serve our students given the current stage of the pandemic, and then trying to anticipate what's going to happen down the line.
That's exactly
it. And I think every teacher in the state, could, no matter what they're teaching, would say the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay, questions from anybody else before we move on? All right. Then I think Brian, you're going to be talking a lot. So could you make? It's going to be awful not to hear your voice and have your expertise. So I'm trying not to be too sad. Could you start with whatever COVID-19 updates
and safety? Sure. I think that Chris and Catherine have both done a fabulous job of summarizing where we are at. We are very much providing direct services. However, we are still offering virtual services. I've said before, and I want to say it again here, there were some really positive things learned through the provision of virtual services. Staff picked up time that they otherwise would have not had when they were in the past traveling all the time between appointments. They learned that there are things that can be done well virtually, and there's no reason to stop offering something that can be done virtually where we can achieve a time savings and a cost savings for it. So where you can not compromise the service but still provide it, it's still going to be offered, and I'm pleased with that. But where direct services are desired by the client and beneficial, we're certainly delivering those as well. Staff do wear masks. We expect that the people we interact with will also wear masks, or they have to maintain social distancing of beyond the 6 feet. If for some reason they have a medical or other reason that precludes them from wearing a mask, we are in the process of verifying that all state employees are vaccinated, and that's a process where the governor had put out an order that state employees need to be vaccinated. So we want to offer to all of you staff that are, you know, safe for you to interact with. So the protocols regarding if you don't feel well, we're going to still continue to make sure that before we go out for an in-person appointment, we want to know if folks aren't feeling well, so that we can be sure that we then offer a virtual service or we reschedule the service. But I think as we continue to ease into the fall, with the COVID variant still being quite present, we are very mindful of that. And I think that our staff are going to, you know, want to be sure that they're entering a situation that is safe. And you also, as a client, will want to know that our staff that are entering the situation are equally free of any symptoms. And again, with the governor's instructions, that the staff are also vaccinated that are coming to provide the direct service. So that's where we are with the COVID update. Let's pause there for a moment.
All right, very quickly, because I'm watching the clock as well.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Mary Silverberg.
Yes.
I would like to know what is the likelihood of this advisory board and the SRC continuing to meet long term, long after we need to, but continuing to meet on Zoom? Because the way I see it, the transportation issue and the number of people, you know, who are employed, who have to be paid, gas, money, all of it. I can see where the state's going to save money, and I would like to know is there a plan yet about keeping this virtual or going back to in-person, or, you know, one meeting a year in-person and several others virtual? Do we have a plan for that yet?
In all honesty, would not be my plan to implement. I think that would be something that my successor will need to take up. I believe the plan is for the December meeting to be virtual, but again, since somebody other than me will be establishing the format for the December meeting, I will just have to defer that to whoever takes over. I think the virtual model has worked well for these types of meetings. We've figured out how to make interpreters available, which is wonderful. All of these meetings do get recorded and do get posted along with the minutes on the agency website. So I think that there's a protocol in place that has been working well, but I just am not in a position to predict what my successor's preferences might be.
Okay, thank you, Brian.
You're welcome.
Oh, that reminds me of a question. I knew there was something else. Catherine, or Brian, the newsletter that you mentioned that is published through Children's Services, is that available on the BESPE website?
Yes, it is. I believe it's in English and in Spanish on the website. It's in the Children's Services section, but they do get posted.
Good. Excellent. Thank you. So, moving on now to budget update.
Well, this would be me. Well, and I am pleased to announce that we received $750,000 in federal vocational rehabilitation reallotment funds. Added to the funds that we already have in a vocational rehabilitation program, this program is in very solid shape for purposes of, you know, projecting out serving all eligible individuals in the program. And certainly, if all of federal fiscal year 2023, as well as probably well beyond that, this program has got sufficient funds. So we are very pleased. I'm sure this advisory board remembers days where we were not able to report on things that positive. So the budget situation is looking well. Chris Lassen did mention earlier about the Julie McLean fund that she left a sizable sum that will allow adult services to have additional options for funding. That is an account that can accept additional donations into it if people wanted to make donations into the Julie McLean fund. There are staff in the agency that have been provided with instructions on how to make a donation if somebody is interested in making a donation. And certainly, like Lisa Tangway has those instructions, all the supervisors have the instructions as well. We do have a new fund that was recently established. It's a homelessness relief fund, and it's available to provide short-term emergency relief to someone who finds himself homeless, to allow them to pay for like a motel room for a few days and also to provide meals. And that's also a fund that can accept donations. And in terms of the other programs that we have, in terms of the deaf blind, all of these programs are funded at levels should be sufficient to continue services throughout the remainder of the state fiscal year and into next year. So I think that the BSBE budget right now is looking relatively positive. That's the budget update.
So, Brian, does this include the, when you mentioned the allotment, does this include the carry forward? Because I mix up these terms sometimes.
Okay, carry forward is what we have available that is right now, basically as of the end of today. Anything we haven't spent in FY21.